Hey everyone, I'm Adam Breckenridge, Director of Coaching here at Your Enneagram Coach, and I'm joined by my good friend Brian Lee, who is the Coaching and Operations Manager here at YEC. Brian and I have the privilege of working together every day to serve our community of certified Enneagram coaches. And this summer, we've had the joy of standing in for our friends Beth and Jeff McCord to host Your Enneagram Coach, the podcast, together. It is our mission to help you see yourselves with astonishing clarity so that you can break free from self-condemnation, fear, and shame by knowing and experiencing. I love that left brain and right brain there, Brian. Knowing and experiencing the unconditional love, forgiveness, and freedom in Christ. And if you love and enjoy this content, then turn on the automatic downloads or like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, share this with someone who would enjoy or benefit from this content as well. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to go a little deeper into the layers of the Enneagram to talk about the centers of intelligence and the stances, and specifically how they offer us a path to finding more balance in life. So, Brian, why don't you kick us off by unpacking this idea of finding balance for us just a little bit more?
Sure thing. So most of us know at this point, the Enneagram is a tool that describes nine distinct types of people and our ways of navigating and responding to our inner and outer world, right? Most of these other assessments and tools tend to focus on behaviors, where the Enneagram focuses on motivations. You've heard us talk about wings, paths, types, motivations, and lots more on this podcast. You may have heard about triads, but we'll talk about two of them today, specifically centers of intelligence, which are often just referred to as triads, and stances. So with a circle of nine types, we can break those down into lots of different groups of three, hence triads. And each triad has its own similar set of strengths and challenges. The one that we hear about and talk about most often are called the centers of intelligence, which show us how different types tend to process and take in information, whether through thinking, feeling, or doing. And then the stances are determined by which center is the most repressed, whether thinking, feeling, or doing. So you can start to see how by exploring these two, the centers of intelligence, dominant, and stances, repressed, we hope to provide a path towards more balanced thinking, feeling, and doing by learning to manage our dominant center and bring up our repressed center. So Adam, why don't you kick us off with the centers of intelligence?
Absolutely. Well, like you said, Brian, this is the most well-known triad within the structure of the Enneagram. Basically, there are three centers of intelligence, sometimes just called the triads. Each is made up of three Enneagram types who are driven by a common desire and a core emotional struggle they all share. So put another way, the centers of intelligence show us how we respond to the world around us based on what we struggle with emotionally and what we desire. Each type develops strategies in an attempt to overcome or compensate for their emotional struggle and desire they share within their triad. And it's probably worth mentioning that it's in these coping mechanisms that we end up living defensive reactionary lives. This is where we get kind of our automatic reactions in response to our emotions and desires, this stuff that's driving us on the inside that sort of makes its way to the outside through our defensive patterns and strategies. This stuff often becomes the primary barrier in our relationships. It's kind of the thing that's getting in the way of the quality life and quality relationships we want. So it's almost like the centers of intelligence are giving us a fast track on the pathway to growth because they help us put into words what we're feeling and what we want. And they help us identify our coping strategies and reactionary patterns that we're using to try to deal with all of that stuff. So in other words, the triads, I think, are really kind of naming the work that most of us need to do. So let's unpack this a little bit further. There are three triads in the centers of intelligence, and we're going to walk through each one. And as we are, I'd love for you just, if those of you who are watching online, those of you who are listening, just tune in, lean in. And as we're talking about these, try to discern which one resonates the most with you. There are three basic triads in the centers of intelligence. They are the instinctual center, also known as the body or the gut triad. This is made up of types 8, 9, and 1. There's the feeling center, also known as the heart triad, which is made up of types 2, 3, and 4. And then there is the thinking center, which is also called the head triad. and that consists of types 5, 6, and 7. So let's start with that gut or body triad. This is the instinctive center. Those in the gut triad respond by doing. They share a core emotional struggle with anger. And so let's talk about how 8s, 9s, and 1s react to that. 8s typically don't necessarily cope with their anger as much as they partner with it to express it. And if they're not in a healthy spot, they may become more assertive. They may use their strength to gain control and to dominate. As Beth likes to say, their 8s are either going to use their anger to bulldoze people in situations to get control, or when healthy, they're going to use their power and their anger to plow a path for others. Type 9s, on the other hand, are often asleep to their anger, because to get in touch with their anger would be to disrupt their need for peace and harmony. It would disrupt their inner world and their outer world. So they tend to suppress their anger and are often unaware that this is their internal struggle. So they try to get control of their anger by ignoring it or remaining numb or asleep to it. Ones tend to repress their anger, since they tend to believe that anger is bad, and their anger is going to somehow get in the way of being good, being right. And so they tend to repress it. What can happen is that anger then can leak out in criticism and voicing judgments onto others, but especially onto themselves. So that's the common emotional struggle for those in the gut or body triad. Let's talk about their common desire that they share, which is a desire for justice and control. 8s don't want the innocent to be harmed, so they want to step in to protect. And we often talk about 8s being a champion for the underdog. And if they're using their power, 8s are powerful people. That's how God made them. And we don't need, there's no need for them to apologize for that. And so when 8s are healthy and they're functioning, you know, in alignment with who God made them to be, they actually use their power to serve the weak. They use their power to bring justice where there is injustice, to protect those who need to be protected. And so this is a gift that 8s bring. Type 9s, in their desire for justice and control, don't want others to be overlooked. So where we see 9s, bringing justice and peace is they make a space for others to have a voice. They bring harmony. They bring unity to the room and to the relationships around them. Type 1s don't want unethical injustices to take place. So they tend to have this gift of calling out what is wrong. This is how they run after their desire for justice. They're going to call out what is wrong so that it can be addressed and fixed. And their anger really plays a role in their gift of reforming what is broken. So I heard a pastor say one time, Brian, and as a type one, you'll appreciate this, but he said, you know, anger is, the Bible says, be angry and don't sin. So but the part of that command is you should be angry about some stuff. And there are some things that if you look at some things in the world and you don't feel angry, that's a sin. That's not okay. And mm-hmm. So we really appreciate this gift that ones have of you channeling their anger to bring reformation to what is broken. So that's the body, the gut triad. Let's talk about the heart triad. Heart triad, the types in this triad are going to respond to the world through their feelings, and they all share a common emotional struggle with shame. When I say shame, I don't mean like healthy shame in terms of embracing your limitations and telling the truth about your weaknesses and vulnerabilities. It's more of like a sense of toxic shame of I'm not sure that I belong and matter. I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure I'm someone worth loving. I don't feel seen and loved. I'm not sure that I belong. It's that kind of voice and that kind of narrative, which all humans struggle with, but those in the heart triad kind of have a particular vulnerability around this struggle with shame. So 2s are in tune with what others are feeling and can fall into serving and caretaking others in order to kind of dodge that feeling of shame. So if I can serve and care for you and receive validation for that, then it soothes that feeling of shame. I feel needed and now I feel wanted. So twos can fall into kind of looking for a sense of worth and being loved through being needed by others and taking care of others, which is a superpower. It's just that when you over-identify with it and use it as a coping mechanism to try to compensate for that feeling of shame, it usually doesn't help you very much. Let's talk about type threes. Type threes tend to deny their feelings. In fact, I've had a lot of threes tell me that they don't actually buy it, that they're in the feelings triad or the heart triad. They tend to deny their feelings and kind of lose touch with their own feelings because they're focused on achieving and doing rather than being. Feelings are inefficient, right? And can get in the way of accomplishing goals and tasks. And what this really boils down to is that appearing successful and accomplishing and achieving can be coping strategies for overcoming the feeling of shame. So in a way to kind of answer the question, do I belong and do I matter? Threes can kind of point to their image of success or all their accomplishments in a way to try to answer that question and resolve their shame. Let's talk about fours. Fours tend to focus feelings inward and really feel all their feelings all the way down to the core. And they don't want you to try to talk them out of their feelings. They actually want to sit there until they've felt it all the way down and they've processed it. And in an effort to kind of try to overcome their feelings of shame or being misunderstood, sometimes fours can over-identify with their uniqueness. They can use being different as a strategy. Interestingly enough, using being different as a strategy for fitting in and belonging. And so this is one of the ways that they tend to try to outrun that feeling of shame. Now, all these types, 2, 3, and 4 in the heart triad, are also united by a common desire for significant identity. That's the common desire that they all share, significant identity. Twos want to be seen as helpful, caring, and selfless. Threes want to have an identity where they're seen as successful. And fours want to be seen as special and unique and different. And I think you can really summarize all of those up by saying twos, threes, and fours just want to be seen and loved for who they are. That's what they're longing for. That's the significant. They want to know that they belong and they matter just out of who they are. So that's the heart triad. And we'll finish this with the head triad. This is the thinking center. So fives, sixes, and sevens are going to respond to the world with thinking. That's how they're going to process and receive information. They're going to think about it. They're united by a common struggle with anxiety or fear. That's the common underlying emotional struggle that they share. Type fives are afraid that they don't know enough. And so to deal with their fear, they're going to try to manage it by acquiring more information. They're going to try to manage their fear sometimes by going inward and withholding themselves. I heard one Enneagram teacher say that, you know, fives can have the tallest and thickest fences, internal fences of any type of the nine types. So that's kind of their coping strategy for dealing with their fear. Sixes can be anxious about all the negative possibilities, anxious about everything, really. I'm a type six, so, you know, I'm stepping on my own toes here. I'm meddling in my own heart. But to try to overcome their fear, sixes will go into the strategy of overthinking, over-preparing, trying to kind of map out and plan for all the worst case scenarios. And that's not all bad. You know, I think fear leads to wisdom. Fear leads to preparation. It'll actually cause you to prepare in healthy ways. But again, if sixes are over-identifying with that and using their preparation, using their overthinking to try to cope with their fear, it's never going to get them very far. In fact, it only exaggerates the anxiety. Sevens can be anxious about becoming trapped in their emotional pain. That's kind of the primary thing that they're afraid of, is their inner world. So rather than looking at their inner world, they will kind of live it up in the outer world. They don't want to be boxed in. They don't want to be bored. They don't want to be limited in any way. Don't clip their wings. And we don't want to clip your wings either, sevens. So if we're honest, if we're being emotionally honest, a lot of that is a strategy for, I don't want to be still long enough that the stuff I don't want to look at on the inside actually catches up with me. So, rather than allowing my inner world to catch up with me, I'm just going to run and fly in the outer world. And I'm going to kind of gobble up experiences and stay stimulated and stay excited. And, that can be kind of the strategy that sevens use to try to outrun that fear and that anxiety. So five, six, and sevens are also united in that head triad by a common desire for security and safety. Fives seek security through knowledge and looking for answers. Sixes, as I said earlier, seek security by knowing all the possibilities and forecasting what might happen. Sevens seek security by avoiding their inner world of anxiety and looking to that external world, as I said, to kind of experience fun and stimulation and keep their options open. So that kind of rounds out the triads, the instinctual centers. You've got thinking, you've got feeling, you've got doing. You've got three really different ways of perceiving and responding to the world. And you can already begin to see how this sets us up to be more gracious and compassionate with one another and how it brings more balance to the relationships and the communities that we're a part of. You know, for those of you in the gut or the body triad, you jump into action. You want to do things. It makes no sense why anyone would want to use their feelings to do that. Feelings slow us down, right? And it makes no sense why someone would want to stop and like, let's think about this. If you're in the gut triad, you just instinctively want to move. You want to jump into action. But for those of you in the heart triad, you live out of your feelings. Even you threes live out of your feelings. And you may think, how can other people be so calloused or insensitive? How do they not think before they act? I mean, do they not realize the effect that they have on other people? And then for those of us in the head triad, we're over here thinking, why can't we all just be rational about this? Can't we slow down before jumping into something and really think through it? And I've got a lot more questions. I mean, what about this? What about that? Have you thought about this? Like, if gut people are ready, fire, aim, those of us in the head center are ready, aim, fire, right? That's where we're at. And hopefully you can see how, you know, we all inhabit the world so differently, and we really need all three perspectives. I mean, each triad in the centers of intelligence represents something of who God is as a thinking, feeling, doing being, and we are made in his image. And so when we make this perspective shift, we begin to view one another with more grace, more compassion. It's easier to love those who are different from us. And there's a sense of balance and unity in how we all work together and live together in the world.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Moms, I am so excited to share with you a huge and wonderful opportunity that we've created for you this summer. It's our Enneagram for Moms cohorts. Yes, a group of moms of your same Enneagram type coming together for a safe place to connect, share, and hear and be validated. Wouldn't that be amazing to be with other moms of your same Enneagram type who see the world through the same lens and truly understand you? It's gonna be amazing. But here's the thing. There are only 25 spots per cohort. We have one in the daytime and one in the evening of your type to choose from. But you're gonna wanna sign up the day it opens. We open registration May 6th to May 13th. Now, these groups will kick off the week of June 10th, and they will go until the week of July 29th. That's 8 weeks together for 90 minutes, sharing, laughing, crying, being together in that safe, intimate place to connect with moms to develop deep, meaningful friendships. And there's so many other things that are going to come with the cohort. I hope that you will join us and learn more when you sign up on May 6th to May 13th at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. I can't wait to see you there.
So that's the centers of intelligence in a nutshell. There's so much more we could say. But if the centers of intelligence are determined by what is most dominant for us, like Brian said earlier, the stances are defined by what is repressed. And this is where some of our different lenses become much, much clearer. So we'll begin to see just how differently we see things and how differently we operate. So, Brian, you want to take us through the stances?
I would love to. And great job walking us through the centers. That was, I loved just hearing that bird's eye view of all of those and how there are so many similarities within those triads, and yet they are so distinctly expressed by the different types in there. How inward and outward, and how we overdo and underdo each of those things. And I think you'll hear that as we walk through the stances in an equally large nutshell. So the stances speak to how we relate to other people, right? Either we move against them, toward them, or away from them. Mm-hmm. They also, like we said, let us know which center of intelligence is most repressed, thinking, feeling, or doing. And this is usually a big surprise to people. Stances also show us our orientation to time. So where the centers of intelligence are grouped together, and if you have a diagram or a picture of the Enneagram symbol in front of you, you can see how the triads are kind of lumped together. 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, right? And it gives you a really good picture and an understanding of why, when people teach the Enneagram, you often hear people start with the number 8. Instead, it's like, why don't they just start with 1 and work their way around? It's like, usually because they're teaching from centers of intelligence. So 8s, 9s, and 1s go together. 2s, 3s, and 4s go together. 5s, 6s, and 7s go together. For the stances, you're going to draw a really sharp triangle. So if you connect 1, 2, and 6, you're going to get the dependent stance, which is also known as the compliant or dutiful stance. And they're called that because they live very compliant lives. They live by the words should and ought. I should do this. I ought to take care of that. They more often do what is expected of them. They don't live by what they actually want to do. They live by what they think is expected of them. They're constantly concerned with what other people think of them. They're generally focused on others and the larger group, or the good, the greater good, rather than just on themselves. And they are repressed in their thinking. They tend to default to the rules and belief systems in order to know what to do. They try to think through what is actually needed before just instinctually following the rules or systems that you already have in place. They are oriented or tethered to the present. It's very much an out of sight, out of mind kind of group. It's not that they don't think about the future or plan. It's not that they don't think about the past and kind of what happened. It's just that they live, the most important thing to them is what's happening right now. And I know that's true for me. So it's like, I put things on the calendar, I journal and reflect on things that have happened in the past. But generally it tends to be, if it's not right in front of me, it's not the most important thing right now. It's Indiana Jones, the Last Crusade. It's like, I write it down so I don't have to remember, right? And then they move towards people to get their needs met. And what this means is, in order to get those needs met, they tend to move towards or get affirmation or confirmation from someone else. So 1s, 2s, and 6s tend to wake up in the morning. They have an idea about what they want to do, but they think they should probably run it by someone else first. It's like, hey, this is what I was thinking about doing, but what do you think? And for some unknown reason, and it usually drives them crazy too. I do this all the time. I did it, Adam, when I signed up or wanted to sign up for BEC, for becoming an Enneagram coach, to become a certified coach. I went back and forth for almost 2 years and kept it a secret to myself of like, I think this is really what I want to do. I think this is what I want to do. And I was just afraid to admit it out loud to my wife to say, hey, what do you think about this? Because I just had already pre-planned all the rejections or the bad ideas or whatever it was. And it ended up just being a, well, you probably should. You've been invested in this for a long time. And it's like, that's the kind of overthinking that happens. And that's the kind of need for affirmation or confirmation that happens, right? So just like the centers of intelligence, and each type does it and expresses it differently, so the 1s, 2s, and 6s in this dependent stance do it differently. So 1s will move towards people by following the rules. And what they really want is to earn their autonomy. Right? They want to stand alone, but really they can't because they need other people's rules and affirmation to do it. 2s move toward people by loving and caring for them in hopes of earning attention, like you said, because they want a significant identity. They want to mean something to someone. Mm-hmm. And then 6s move towards people by being loyal to others in hopes of gaining or earning their security. So you start to hear how these centers of intelligence and these stances are really closely related, right? So the next triangle or triad that we'll move towards are threes, sevens, and eights. So they take charge. They're happy to share their own agenda. They tend to wake up in the morning. They know exactly what they want to do, and nothing is going to stop them from doing it. Where they tend to be repressed is in their feelings. So they take in information, some of them, with their feelings, but then they tend to ignore it because, like you said, feelings slow us down. So why would I want to pay attention to that? They just want to go and do. So instead of ready, aim, fire, they're just fire, ready, aim. Or fire, aim, ready. Whatever it is, it's fire first. They tend to default to their intensity in order to feel like they're okay. And while they may try to be aware of how you really feel and consider feelings, they really just want to instinctually demand what you think you need, and they just want to go and do it.
Yeah.
Right? Threes, sevens, and eights are tethered or oriented to the future. They're constantly moving, constantly planning, constantly pushing, pushing, pushing. So it feels very aggressive or assertive at times. A lot of stereotypical leaders will be in this assertive stance because they live as if tomorrow is already happening. So there's this sense of urgency with them, right? And so a lot of language will say that they move against, push against. Some teachers will say they stand independent of other people to get their needs met. So it's not necessarily pushing against in a bad way, because some of us need to be pushed sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that when they know what they want, and they always know what they want, they just go after it. It's this boldness and urgency that I honestly sometimes wish I had more of, right? Mm. They tend to react to stress by making themselves even bigger. So threes will move against by being assertive in their goals in hopes of earning attention, right? It's that significant identity. Sevens will move against by being assertive in hopes of satisfying those desires, because they really want security. And then eights will move against by being assertive against others in hopes of earning their autonomy to be able to stand alone, because they don't want to be betrayed. They don't want to be left behind. So you hear again how differently that gets expressed in each of those types, but how they all have these common similarities in being assertive, right? And then finally, we have this withdrawing stance. These are our fours, fives, and nines. They are repressed in their doing. They tend to be slow to act. They tend to be, not always, more introverted. They want to keep to themselves more, because when things get too big, when things get stressful or overwhelming, these types will tend to pull away and stand back, right? It's like, okay, feels like too much is happening. Let me just pull back here and observe. So fours will tend to take in that information in the heart triad with their feelings, and then they will have thoughts about them. Type fives will take in that information with their thinking, and then they will have lots of feelings about them. Type nines will take in all that information, and they will know exactly what to do. They just won't, it won't occur to them to be the one to do it. Right? And then all three of these, fours, fives, and nines, are tethered or oriented to the past. It's constantly reflecting on or being reminded of things that happened behind. Everything that is important or meaningful to them in the present only has meaning because of something that is tied to the past. Right? So they're constantly referencing someone who was important to them, a quote, a teacher, a significant event, whatever it was. It's like, oh, well, this has meaning to me today because of. Right? And they're the ones in the meeting when you have these assertive leaders who are pushing, pushing, pushing. Hey, here's our next goal. Here's our next thing. It's like the fours, fives, and nines are the ones raising their hands saying, hey, but remember when we, or remember when this person said, right? So they tend to move away from people for fear of not having their needs met, right? They react to stress by making themselves smaller. And it doesn't mean they can't be present. It doesn't mean they can't be loving or caring. It just means that in general, they are going to look inwards to get their needs met. So fours move away from people by withdrawing into their idealized self in hopes of earning that identity, significant identity or attention. Fives will move away by withdrawing into their minds in hopes of earning security, right? They have what this, they have this thing that we call the mind palace, like Sherlock Holmes. They will just, hey, things are getting too much. I'm just going to withdraw and start to think about my thoughts. How can I reorganize all the things that are in there to make sense of things? And then type nines will move away from people by withdrawing into their safety, their inner sanctum, in hopes of earning autonomy, right? To not have to feel so attached to all the things. So having heard all of that about the stances, Adam, how do you respond to that?
Well, I'm over here thinking, so I'll gut level honest. Mm-hmm. Help me process how a type six in the thinking center who tends to live in my head is thinking repressed. Because all my six friends are going, wait a minute, what? I'm thinking repressed? So yeah, tell me a little more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where threes, sixes, and nines are very special. So if you
Thank
look
you.
At that
stop
Enneagram
right there.
Diagram,
you can stop right there. That's
we'll
all
call
I
it the podcast
hear.
Right there, right? So if you look special. At a diagram, the three, sixes, and nines form the only perfect equilateral triangle on there. They're connected for a reason, and they're right in the middle of each center of intelligence, right? And they're at the sharpest point of each stance. So where you are most repressed is also where you are most dominant. So threes in that heart or feeling triad are both dominant and repressed in their feelings. Sixes are most dominant and repressed in their thinking. And nines are most dominant and repressed in their doing. So for all three of them, we call them our anchor points. Some teachers, I think, call them the revolutionary points. It just means that they process information and the world through their primary center of intelligence, and then they just don't use it productively.
Oh,
right.
Wait a minute. So I'm not using my thinking productively.
Let's be kind to ourselves. What do you say?
That's the application point from this.
That's episode. The application. And so, like we mentioned at the top of the episode, because we're dominant in one center and repressed in another, we want to learn to manage our dominant center, bring up our repressed center so that we can find more balance and live a more balanced life. Right.
Yeah.
It's like sitting on a three-legged stool that's missing a stool. You know, it's any of those wobbly chairs that we've ever sat in all of our life. It's not easy work. It takes a lot of self-awareness to even notice our centers at work. And as a one, I'm in that same stance, Adam, as you. So we are both in that dependent stance that is thinking repressed. And every single one, two, or six that I've ever met that learns about this stance is usually offended by, what do you mean I'm thinking repressed? I think all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And so the really great question to ask ourselves is, yeah, but how much of that thinking is actually helpful and productive?
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of my Enneagram coach that I had. By the way, if you're looking for a coach, go to myenneagramcoach.com. But when I say my Enneagram coach, I mean Adam's Enneagram coach that I had 6 or 7 years ago, who introduced me to the Enneagram. He used a phrase with me where I basically was trying to tell him all the reasons why I had thought through some decisions that I had made and some things I had said and done. And I was like, I thought about this. And anyway, he basically said to me, your best thinking got you into this situation. It's not going to get you out of it. Like, so I had thought and thought and thought and thought and thought and lived in my head. And yeah, I think I wasn't using my thinking productively. So, yeah, man, thanks Brian for unpacking that for me. That's really, really helpful. And I think the goal of this episode is that we take this awareness and we begin to apply it so that we can live a more balanced life. I mean, not only balanced within ourselves, like by managing our dominant center and bringing up our repressed center, but also balanced with one another. I'm just really mindful that there are so many different perspectives, ways of seeing the world, different gifts and strengths within all nine types. And, you know, you said something earlier about you know, those in the assertive type. You said sometimes we need to be pushed. Like I need my three, seven, and eight friends to push me at times. You know, like I actually need that. I need to be pushed sometimes to take the risk, to jump out of the nest, to like, Adam, you can fly, you can do it. Like, just go, you know, where I'm stuck on the ground, overthinking everything. Like, I'm just mindful that I need the other types and I need these other perspectives to be a balanced me and to experience unity within myself and in my relationship. So really grateful for what you've shared today in this episode, Brian. You have any closing thoughts or closing exhortations for us?
Yeah, a few. Just I think one of them, like you said, is just having that level of awareness of those different centers of intelligence and how they work and how they're stacked for each of us continues to show us how we operate in the world so differently and how we need those different perspectives and approaches to function fully and wholly, right? So one of the things I love about using and learning centers of intelligence and stances with teams in particular in the workplace is learning these different orientations to time clearly describes and explains every single staff meeting I've ever sat through. Right? So you've got this visionary leader who's leading the charge, isn't taking time to celebrate the huge thing that we just finished because they're already busy talking about the next thing that we have to do. Right?
Yes.
And meanwhile, all the ones, twos, and sixes who are tethered to the present are hearing all this overwhelming information of all these next initiatives that we have to take on. And they all want to raise their hand and go, I'm sorry, but how are we going to do that thing? Because there's all these steps that are going to be required to get there. And then all the withdrawn stance people who are tethered to the past are going, remember when we tried that before? Right. And then meanwhile, all these threes, sevens, and eights are out here getting frustrated with all these wet blankets, just saying, why can't you just get on board and see what I see?
Oh, sure.
And so it sets up this, it sets up this automatic opportunity for tension and conflict and disagreement and all these things, because people are not even living in the same time zone in their heads in one staff meeting at the same time together. And when we can uncover this thing and recognize that this is where we're coming from, and then bring the strengths of and appreciation for each of those stances, all of a sudden it changes how we approach that.
When
you have the leader in the room who can see and appreciate all those dependent people who say, you're gonna help us get there because you know all the steps between A and Z. So thank you for bringing that. Thank you for slowing me down enough to connect those dots. And thank you to all those withdrawn people who need me to pause and reflect on the past of how we got here today and who need time to celebrate this thing that we just accomplished, right? And like you're saying, all those dutiful and compliant and dependent people who need to be pushed a little bit. It's like, okay, I know you just want to stay here and maintain something, but we need to keep moving forward.
That's right.
And all these withdrawn people who just want to stay in the past, who also need to be pushed and be reminded of all these other things that are happening right now.
Yeah.
So it's that level of appreciation for each three of those things. And then when we recognize where we are most repressed, whether it's thinking, feeling, or doing, to remember how to be productive in each of those and to not overdo, because it's with the Enneagram, it's our greatest strengths are also our greatest weaknesses or liabilities.
Always. Yeah.
Right. So for me as a one, I tend to overdo the doing and underdo the thinking, right? It's just let's do this thing. And then I got caught in this trap of thinking because it's like, yeah, but how am I going to do it? And what are all the steps? And what's the best way to do it? Because I want to make sure I do it the right way. And all of that's being supported by my feelings, which are going every which way, right? So when you look at those three and how they're stacked for each type, so a two is going to be lead by feeling, and they're going to support it by doing things and be repressed in their thinking. So I use my heart to say, oh, here's what everyone else is feeling. So let me just jump in to do this thing for them. And they forget to think about it productively. So what does productive thinking look like for two? It's like, oh, well, is this mine to do? Do they actually need the help or even want it? Did I stop to think about that? Right. For you as a six, like you're saying, it's like I am dominant in my thinking, but I'm also repressed in my thinking. So what does that mean? It means I have lots of feelings about my thoughts all day long and I want to do something about it, but I'm not doing productive thinking to get me there.
Yes.
So what does productive thinking look like for me as a six? Well, what is the decision that's going to get me there? There are lots of options. There might even be a best option, but what's just the next right thing that I should do that's going to move the needle instead of constantly cycling through all these things, right? So for every single type, you just look at that different stacking of what is dominant, what is supporting, and what is repressed. How do I manage my dominant center so I'm not overdoing it all the time? How I bring up that repressed center so it's more helpful and more productive? And in doing each of those for each of those types, we can find, like we said, more balance in the way that we live just by being aware that those three things exist.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Yeah. Thanks, Brian. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, you know, send us an email. We'd love to hear what is resonating with you when you consider the triads, when you consider the stances. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We would love to hear how all of this is resonating with you and respond and engage with you. Brian, you want to take us out?
Love to. So if you're interested in hearing more, learning more about the Enneagram, you can always visit our website at yourenneagramcoach.com. If you want to take it a step further, Adam already mentioned, get some Enneagram coaching for yourself. Check out our incredible directory of certified coaches at myenneagramcoach.com. And if you want to take it a step even further and become a certified Enneagram coach, you can always check out our leading certification program also at yourenneagramcoach.com. And our team is always here to guide you each step of the way. And you can join us in blessing others with accelerated transformation. And Adam, why don't you take us out?
Absolutely. Yeah. Next time, Brian and I will be back with another episode talking about the Enneagram and healthy leadership. It's going to be practical. It's going to be fun. We hope you're subscribed and you won't miss it. And remember, the Enneagram reveals your need for Jesus, not your need to work harder. It is the gospel that transforms us. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye, everyone.